This is the SMQB's podcast. We can be heard on Spotify, Apple Pod, or wherever you get your pods, or seen on YouTube. So please listen, check us out, and give us a 5-star review. I am Rooster, filling in for our traditional host, Bison, and I'm joined by SMQB regulars Milk, Hope, and House. Fellas,
what's
it's
up,
been a...
What's up, Rooster?
What's hey, guys. Up? Milk, good to see you, man.
It's
been
a
really busy,
you.
busy sports week. Got a lot to cover, man. In Major League Baseball, the Phillies and the Yankees sit atop the National and American League. So two of us
Runaway
are
train.
Happy. Yeah,
Runaway
baby.
Train.
We had
I've got a score to settle with New York still.
We had the Premier League championship settled yesterday with Man City winning its fourth straight. We had the Italian Grand Prix on Sunday. We had two raucous game sevens in the NBA playoffs. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs are finally winding down. We may even have a Canadian
game
in the Stanley Cup, right?
Tonight, game seven.
Against the Stars. So congratulations, Pope. The WNBA is off to a bit of an inauspicious start. Caitlin Clark is finding out that she's not in Iowa anymore. And we had a barn burner at Valhalla yesterday for the PGA Championship. So let's get started. Hope, who do you want to bring to the bar and chat up about the world of sports?
I would be interested in sitting down with one Stephen A. Smith because...
talk about the Cowboys?
So, well, we can do that some other time. But he was so all in on the Knicks that, you know, it basically went over the edge of being
Stephen A. over the edge. Come
objective
on.
Objective commentator. And, you know, I don't know if you guys saw the pregame, but they were showing, you know, the Brunson walk in and Hart walk in. And then there was Stephen A. in his suit, like he's going to fucking suit up and play or something. You know, it would just be interesting to see where his head is right now after his beloved Knicks got crushed in game seven. Just to hear what his thoughts are going forward.
I feel like there's some resentment there for Stephen A. Smith.
Cowboy resentment.
I'm going to take this guy behind me, Bryson DeChambeau, only because, look, he didn't win yesterday, but he played really damn well, and for two, obviously we know he's part of the LIV tour, but I don't know if you guys noticed, but like he was a fan favorite yesterday. I mean, the roars, the crowd, everybody was rooting for him. It kind of showed me that these two groups can coexist, and they need to figure out how to do it quickly. Because there's a lot of talent.
Bryson is one of the storylines I want to cover when we get to the PGA.
Absolutely. I mean, sorry, Pope, but he played pretty well this weekend.
How about you, House? Who are you bringing to the bar?
I am going to bring Charles Leclerc to the bar, the Ferrari top driver, who is back home in Monte Carlo this week for the F1 Monte Carlo race. And I'm hoping that maybe if I go to the bar with Charles, maybe I could get maybe... front row seat.
A little play
to watch the race.
God, this is my favorite one.
This is a good one.
This would be so much fun to attend. I am going to bring Scott Perry, the GM of the Knicks, and talk to him about re-signing Tibbs to a long-term contract. Despite the fact that Tibbs cannot seem to control Brunson when he gets out of control and decides he's going to play 1-on-3 and not pass the ball, he is a damn good coach and we should re-sign him. The last thing we need is to start over again with a coach. Re-sign Tibbs and all five of his hairs.
Wow. I can't wait to get to NBA talk more about that. Wow.
All right. Well, let's start out with you, Milk. PGA. What's some good storylines? Everybody knows the outcome. Talk about some really good storylines from that event.
Well,
I mean, shit. Where do we start? It was a hell of a weekend, starting off with Scheffler. I don't know if we want to talk about that now.
Go for it.
But, well, I mean, what an incredible beginning to the PGA with Scheffler in jail. I'll get y'all's thoughts on it. But look, overall, I thought, and I'll let House get into Valhalla and how it failed everyone, but I thought it was really exciting. I mean, this thing went down to the wire. I thought, I felt really, really good for Xander. I mean, talk about a guy who has been on the cusp. It kind of reminds me of, I'm not putting him at the same level of Phil, but it was kind of Phil pre-major. He's got that caveat, best guy to not win a major yet. And he had so much pressure on him.
Someone here said totally, it was never going to happen. I think it might be you, Milk.
I don't know if that was me. That was Pope. And it almost, on 18, it almost fell away from him. He had an unbelievable shot on a really tough lie with his feet.
The degree of difficulty on that shot, I could not believe that shot. Not one of us. We could take 100 shots between the four of us, and not one of us would pull that shot off.
I didn't have him lined up for birdie. I did not have him lined up for birdie on that lie.
I don't know. Did you guys see the golf channels? Johnson Wagner. Have you seen what he's been doing?
Yeah.
Did you see him try to hit that shot?
Yeah, he takes shots in different spots.
Yeah. No, he tried to hit the shot Xander did, where he's dwarfed, where he's, you know, he's got his feet in the sand. Yeah. And he flared it out and put it in the hazard.
Yeah, you choked down on a four iron and hit the thing 200 and something yards straight down the middle of the fairway.
And you got to think he's sitting there going like, "Oh God, am I gonna like miss out again?"
Yeah,
this is like the British Open 2018 or whatever.
And some of the shots out of the rough that those guys hit, I mean, just really, really incredible shot making. I understand that the course was easy for them, so easy that the next, you know, lowest score was 265 points difference for the total net score of all golfers at Riviera.
Minus 240.
There was a ton of rain. There was a ton of rain that had to have come tremendously. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you done with Valhalla? That's what I'm
But there's still out, right? There were still some unbelievably excellent shot making by all these guys. It was some difficult shots out of the rough landing on the green. I was impressed.
Like, do you guys like going to a baseball game and seeing a 13-12?
Every
13-12
now and then. Now and then.
Yes,
sure.
I do.
Yes. 100%. I like to see a slug. I don't want to see it every game, but every now and then I'd like to see a slugfest.
You can give me minus one, minus two, Justin Rose 2013 at Marion every single time.
You want to go to a baseball? Every baseball game you go to is a 1-0 pitcher's duel?
I wouldn't. Listen, let's put it this way. For World Series games or majors, this is a major. This is supposed to, as I love Pope's expression, this is when the course is supposed to bring them to their knees. Like, okay, I get it. U.S. Open is always the very, very toughest. And the Masters has a stretch of very tough holes. But come on, this was like a miniature golf course. You had multiple golfers have four rounds under 70 and still didn't even sniff victory. I think it should be more of a test than this was.
Well, it tested guys like Morikawa's ability to sink putts.
He couldn't putt, but that wasn't because of like undulating greens or anything like that, or tricked out greens. He just couldn't putt yesterday.
No, I'm just saying when the scores are that high, you have to hit your putts.
That's true. That's very true. I mean, we're going to go in whatever, 5 weeks, 3 weeks, to Pinehurst, and it's going to be a much, much different story with those crown greens.
Those greens?
Yeah. I mean,
even if it rains, they still don't hold and they're mounded.
You know, I saw the schedule. I didn't pay attention to all of them, but I know in 2 years there's a local course here, Aronimink, and 2 years after that, it's Olympic in 28. Those are courses that are capable of holding opens. And if they have those course conditions to what they should be, you won't see scores like this. I just thought it was a little bit, it was fun. there is no question watching that back nine when everybody seemed to be in play, even at a time like Rose was making a charge and Lowry was in play with a couple putts more, Cobb was in play. And of course you had, you know, Xander Victor. And Victor and DeChambeau
there for a
and
while.
Thigala was there for a while. So that is fun. That I agree with is fun, but I'd just assume to see that same fun around 3-4 under.
Milk, yeah. You started out this conversation talking about Bryson, and I have this question for you. I mean, he was not well liked by many golf fans for years. He was like a robot. People just didn't like him. And it seems like he's had a change in personality for the better. And my question to you is this, it's twofold. Do you think going over to LIV helped Bryson get in touch with just being a human being rather than a robot and being more of a fan favorite? And number two, did going to LIV kill Jon Rahm's career because he's so damn sensitive? He can't stand the fact that people angry with him and now he sucks. What do you think?
I think DeChambeau kind of, yeah, it's almost like he goes away to LIV. He's sort of forgotten on the PGA Tour. I think these guys come back with a little chip on their shoulder.
But you know, he's kind of admitted to doing a little YouTube training so that he can relate to the fans a little bit in the media.
He's definitely become a YouTube sensation. And I think a lot of people who are out at the course, you know, they're insider type people. They're following him on that. And, you know, you also like the guy that likes to bomb the driver and swing really hard. I mean, that player's always been a fan favorite. And so you put those two together and Bryson finally showed emotion and some humanization. I think that lent him to be a fan favorite. It'll be interesting to see how he's received in North Carolina at Pinehurst. I think it's a different crowd. So let's watch.
What's going on with Jon Rahm?
I didn't see an anti-LIV situation yesterday.
No, I didn't.
I saw a guy who, like, everybody was supporting.
Perceives there to be one, and it's messing with his head. Don't you think?
I think the fans want to be treated to seeing all the best golfers in the same place. Absolutely. So I think the fans are thrilled that there, at least for this, there doesn't have to be division. I don't know, Pope. I'm curious, why? What about North Carolina is different? Does U.S. Open?
No, I think the U.S. Open crowd might be a little different than the PGA crowd. That's
interesting.
How so?
In what way?
I think
who's number 21 behind you?
Your fans have got to watch the YouTube.
No. I mean, no. My point is, I think at the PGA, you probably had more locals there from the Kentucky area, and you know clearly, they fell in love with Bryson. At the U.S. Open, it's not going to be the locals. It's going to be guys coming in from all over the country. It's just a different mix. I've been to two U.S. Opens at Pinehurst. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the LIV golfers are received. If Bryson plays really well and he gets the crowd behind him, then, you know, that's good for him.
I don't think, I don't think that course, I'm selling short Bryson at Pinehurst. I don't think that course lends to his game very well.
You can't just control the course by hitting big teams.
Exactly.
It's a lot of finesse. You have your short game has to be amazing in order to get up and down with those mounds. Donald Ross, Milk,
you brought up the Scheffler situation, and for the five listeners who don't know what happened, just quickly tell them what happened.
Well, I mean, I guess we still don't fully know the details, but it sounds like he was coming in to the course at like 5:30 in the morning. There was an unfortunate fatality. Someone had gotten, what happened there? Did he get
somebody
in
on the security staff who worked there was trying to cross the street and got run over by a bus?
Yeah, horrible. So it sounds like there was, you know, he gets there, there's this homicide investigation going on. It sounds like he maybe tried to go around it or something, and you know, cop got pissed because he wasn't listening to him, and it sounds like it was a very confusing situation.
Chaotic.
You have to say chaotic.
Yes.
Chaotic.
PJ wants you to say chaotic.
That's the buzz.
Chaotic.
And his lawyer. So it's buzzword.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought I heard that today the charges might get dropped. So
House, you have some opinions about this. Let's hear it. I mean, I think I'm with Alice. I think the police are being drama queens about this.
I mean, you mean the soiled pants?
Yeah. $80 for the pants. You know you're in trouble with your story when you have to throw in there that your pants
beyond repair.
this guy's basically like a traffic accident expert. This guy was aiming for something. It's hard to imagine that he showed up to like day two of the PGA thinking that he was looking to get himself involved in some major drama with a lawsuit or something. But once he was involved in it, my God, did he power out like ridiculously. He had Scheffler had the PGA Tour player on the side of the car. It identified what he was doing. Other players said that they were being asked to, you know, go in that westbound direction of traffic around the accident stuff. There was something weird that happened with this guy there where he just flipped. And I don't know if you guys have heard this same thing, that for the time being, he's on administrative leave. He did not turn on the body cam when they arrested him.
Or did he? Because it was checked that there was video.
Oh, that's true. Or they're just lying.
They just don't like it. They don't like it.
Who's the reporter who was there? Jeff something or other.
Dan Rappaport.
Darlington.
Darlington disputes this officer's version of the story, and he was clearly an eyewitness.
Well, so do other ESPN journalists who were in a van right behind Scotty. So one of their guys said was that basically the officer was trying to pull him over, but he wasn't dragged. He was like running alongside the car and he fell down.
Well, Darlington said he tried to attach himself to the car, like,
right,
you know, he tried to grab onto it or something while it was moving. Scheffler says he was waved around like every other PGA car that came in front of him.
I guarantee you, because this same thing happened to my wife, who's a terrible driver.
Wow.
Some police officer was like, don't go right or whatever. She wasn't paying attention and she keeps going. And then the cop gets pissed.
Did Natalie stretch in the slammer?
He was not put in jail, but, you know, he was not happy.
Let me ask you this.
Who do you think was more entitled in the moment, Natalie or Scheffler?
Probably Natalie.
Did Natalie name drop because Scheffler didn't?
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I am? Dude, my husband is
I'm,
on
I'm married to,
a
I'm married
from
to
the SMQB's
a national podcast.
Like,
how dare
you? Do you know the podcast he's on?
And they're like, okay, we're definitely taking you in. But let me ask you guys this. So at a time when Scheffler, when the whole thing went down, it's like the world is coming to an end. Let's cancel golf forever. We're never having it here ever again, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, the news is a 24-hour cycle. And by Sunday, you had the lowest scoring golfer ever at the PGA tournament in any major. A great final, whatever, great crowds. Do you think that notwithstanding the pedestrian death and the fog delays and the Scheffler, all that, do you think Valhalla survives all of that and gets another major? Or do you think they really got canceled from this series of events?
If I'm Scotty Scheffler, I'm never playing there again.
Well, I have your answer, House. The PGA doesn't own Valhalla anymore. That's why Valhalla got all the PGA and the Ryder Cup. They don't own it anymore. It's privately owned. No, they're not going back ever.
But how about any major, Pope?
Okay. Well, I mean, but they wouldn't have it open. And the only one they could have is a PGA, and they're not going to have that, and they'll never have a Ryder Cup again. So, no.
Because it's too easy?
They're done.
Because the course is no longer a match for the current PGA Tour.
The PGA owned that course, and that's where they decided they wanted to stage PGA Championships and Ryder Cup, period. When they sold it, that was it. That's the end of Valhalla as a major venue. In addition to all the other shit that went down this
week. Well, yeah, of course.
Milk, do you want to cover the part of the... Do you want to cover the part of the PGA Championship involving the fantasy golf majors, or did you want to skip over that part?
We'll get to that. No, for our listeners, our very own House finished tied for second, right?
That's in score, tied for second
in the whole fantasy golf majors. Second in the entire fantasy golf major pool.
Well, and I think it's important.
How much did you win, House?
Hang on. It's important for our listeners to know that combined, House and I won $565. That's huge for the SMQB.
House won $550, so that means you won $1,500.
Listen, let's just be clear.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. It's a great story.
In case Cheryl is listening, he did not lose money gambling on fantasy golf majors. He made $5.
$5. So, no, yeah. Well, wait a minute. It was $20 in, and he made $15.
Oh,
no. I only had one entry. $10. Yeah, $5. I'm going to let it ride on the open.
Speaking of which, I'm still owed another $50, but that's
so. Before we get off this Scottie Scheffler story, he comes back from being arrested, gets out of the jail where he's stretching in his orange jumpsuit,
watching himself on ESPN,
getting ready for his round. Shoots a 66 on Friday, a 73 on Saturday, and on Sunday a 65. Hope, what was the difference on Saturday?
Well, there was a couple of things. I think the number one thing was that his caddy, Ted Scott, was not there. He his daughter was graduating high school. And, you know, Scotty's such a stand-up guy. Ted asked Scotty early on this year whether he could go see his daughter's graduation. He said, absolutely. So he had a different caddy. It's actually a guy who used to play on the tour some, but he's the PGA chaplain. He's the PGA chaplain. And, you know, But the other issue was, and Scotty talked about how, you know, there was a lot of adrenaline on Friday after he got out of jail. But on Saturday, he said, you know, his morning routine wasn't the same. He was exhausted. It finally hit him. And you could see
he spoke to his lawyer Saturday morning.
He made some bad decisions, like trying to drive number four after
he was regretting the jailhouse tattoo and all that stuff. All that stuff was wearing off, and now he's like, oh,
Scotty, don't go tattoo. Don't do it.
Here's my question, and maybe I'm too old school, but if you're a caddy making, I don't know, I think Ted Scott's made about $1.5 million this year from Scotty. Do you miss a major if that's your job? That's your job.
I'd go to my kid's graduation.
I think, but for what happened to him on Friday morning, he probably could have survived having a different caddy, but it was a bad combination. And, you know, his other caddy just probably didn't talk him out of some decisions that he made that Ted Scott probably could have. But Scotty, you know, he's got a new kid. He's still number one. I mean, okay, so he's not going to win the Grand Slam. He's going to be okay.
Yeah. All right. I have one storyline from this that I think is going to piss Pope off, but we'll say. Here it is. Can we stop with the before every major talking about how Tiger and Rory are part of the big story? They're not. Tiger is Dunsky. He is. He's a living legend. He's the greatest golfer ever, maybe. But the guy missed the cut by 8 strokes. He was down there with Michael Block. He's not ever going to be in contention for a major again. And we just need to accept that and get over it, period.
I'm fine with that. It's not me who's pushing that storyline.
You listen to any commentary leading up to any major, and Tiger is one of the lead stories. It shouldn't be. And Rory hasn't won in, what, 20 years, a major? How long has it been?
10
years.
Valhalla and 2014.
He's not winning anytime soon. Let's just get over that. And he's not the story either.
I'm not sure about Rory. I don't think you can say Rory's not a story. Look, he motorboated.
I'm not saying he's not a story, but he's not the story. He's not the lead story. It's disrespectful to guys like Scottie Scheffler for Rory to constantly be getting all this play.
But Rory won his last two tournaments going into the PGA, including the Quail Hollow, where he boat raced Xander on the last day. So he's always going to be a story until he wins his next major.
I agree, he should be a story, but not the story.
Well, of course,
until he does it. He wins something.
Rory will be a factor at Royal Troon, I think.
Rory should retire.
Playing too well.
I think we all do.
Well, hey.
What he takes too much of the storylines. I agree, Rooster.
If we're going into Rory, then we start talking about, you know, what's going on with his off the course life too, right?
He might go on a tear now. So
yeah, maybe that'll help him.
Yeah.
All right.
Is he dating Amanda Bayless? Huh?
Does anybody have any?
Amanda Bayless.
By the way, I wasn't going to get into this, but Amanda Bayless's interview of Xander was embarrassing. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
I didn't see it.
I know you're so into your family, and it's great that they're all here. And he's like, well, actually, my dad's in Hawaii and my mom's in San Diego. And she's like, oh, oops.
She wasn't they're paying actually attention not here to at detail all. The night
yeah,
before.
They're really not here, but nice try.
That's funny.
All right. Anybody have anything else on PGA?
No.
Let's move along to the NBA Pope.
Get into the Dallas segment.
This is not the Dallas segment. This is we got the Celtics versus the Pacers, and Porzingis is back. He's back. They're saying he's back.
He's gonna play game one.
Does that change everything? I mean, I know last time we were on, I was saying without Porzingis, Celtics are losing to whoever comes out of the West.
Absolutely.
Not, with Porzingis, I don't know if that's true. What do you guys think? I'm assuming they get past the Pacers, which I think they'll do in five.
Without KP, they would have potentially some difficulty with the Pacers.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, look. Here's my
The Pacers are on a little heater right now, and you know they've got some inside presence that if KP's not there, I'm not sure that Boston can be able to stop them as much.
The Knicks were up 3-2 on the Pacers with one starter in their lineup.
The Knicks were up 2-0 and 3-2. Here's the thing, on the East, because I know Pope's going to have a bunch to tell us about the West and Dallas in particular and the matchup that's going on there with Minnesota. But on the East, the Pacers had a legendary shooting game. I mean, whatever you want to say, it's hard to beat any team that shoots 67%.
At one point, it was almost 80%.
Almost 80%
in the game.
Yeah.
First half.
70, that's crazy. 70% at half. It was, 70% at half, and they had closed in on 80% in the first half. They could not miss. The other thing that I had this interesting discussion with my kids yesterday while watching both the basketball games. I think when you get to playoff basketball, you need a dog, a D-A-W-G dog. And at a certain point, because one of the story is that they have a bunch of dogs in their lineup. I mean, I think all of those guys, all the Villanova guys play with a lot of heart, play with a lot of tenacity. I mean, those are real dogs. The Knicks had closed it to about,
eight points.
Okay. Got to eight. Maybe I thought even six at some point. There was a timeout. And then the Pacers called in their secret weapon, their dog, TJ McConnell.
Yes.
That guy is a goddamn playoff dog.
Yes.
And that is what teams need. And when we shift over to the discussion of the West, I'm really curious because I think Minnesota has some real dogs in them. And I'm not so sure about Dallas. I mean, I think of the remaining four teams, talent on the floor, I think right now they have the most talent.
Second most, I would say.
Why? You think Boston has more?
I do, yeah. I think the T-Wolves have the most potential talent of all of them.
Yeah,
I think we've
erratic.
All been underestimating the T-Wolves, especially me.
Yeah, they're radically talented. I mean, even in yesterday's win, you know, Ant going 6 of 24 and they still won the game. I still don't know how that happened, but I think the Mavs talent, you know, they've got 2.5 superstars. Two for sure superstars. And I'm not even sure that the Tatum and Jalen Brown are playing like superstars right now. So right now I give the edge to the Mavs, but maybe kicking it over to the West, Pope, like, do the Mavs have dogs to take down Minnesota in that way?
PJ Washington's been a dog.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he has stirred it up. He's been a protector for Luka when Luka's getting pushed around. You know, in the Clippers series, he and Harden and some others got into it. And, you know, PJ has a reputation around here now as being kind of an enforcer. I think Daniel Jones Jr. Is a dog too. He's a kind of come out of nowhere. And look,
McDaniel.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you're right. I think the T-Wolves clearly, they play with a lot of energy. Yeah. Dallas does not have that kind of energy because Luka, by definition, basically, or the way he doesn't bring the ball down, you know, on a fast break pace every time. He slows it down. You know, he uses his body to bully and to get into position or to get to the point where he can dish it out.
He's trying to let the Budweiser settle down in his belly.
He needs more Bud Light. But I think, you know, the story in the West, though, is that these two teams, the way that they got there is part of the story. I mean, the T-Wolves, somebody on this pod, Schwerbaum, had declared the T-Wolves atrocious, dead, and buried.
Yep.
Yep. Wow. They were down by 20 in the beginning of the third quarter, and nobody
did you believe that, too?
Oh, yeah, I did, too. Listen, I thought that was a story. I even said that Cat was a dumb player. Last Monday, I said that.
No, I mean, it
was. And he showed it again when he was trying to inbound under the basket in that game, but he had a hell of a game.
I think ESPN was, what, 99.9% chance that the Nuggets were going to win by 20 with 10 minutes left after Murray hit that three? I was waiting for the T-Wolves to fold. And instead of folding, they like doubled down. Their defense just got really, really intense. They harassed the shit out of Joker, and Joker finally got tired. I mean,
he looked slow and unathletic, even though he scored like 35 points.
There's two stories there. One is, here's the irony. On Joker, they rotated. They took away the defensive player of the year, Gobert, defending him, and they switched over Kat and Naz Reid to defend him. And those guys, the two of them, basically tag team him and just wore him down. And we have talked on this pod before about whether or not Tibbs made the mistake with the Knicks. I don't know. It remains to be seen because they just ran out of healthy players, as Rooster said. But he played basically a seven-man team. I think Malone made a mistake by not giving Jokic a breather in that game. The guy was – he's already out of shape to begin with, but he was just completely, completely gassed. And that's one guy that does not have DAWG in him. He just doesn't – he's not a dog. He's an elite player, elite player, but he's not a dog.
Like, he was so tired, he was missing 10-foot fadeaways. And I've never seen him shoot threes so poorly in his entire career.
I mean, his technique has gotten worse.
I mean, since when does he shoot a three from, like, he touches the ball to the top of his upper back before he releases it? It's like he's shooting a three like women in the 50s used to shoot basketball.
Well, so Minnesota is
two-handed from behind the head shot.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota is playing with amazing confidence right now. They have home court. Dallas is guaranteed to lose game one. Jason Kidd is 0-5 in game ones. That's, you know, they like to dig them a hole early on. They're going to have to withstand, you know, big time energy up at Minnesota in order to get a split. They don't get a split. You know, the series is over from my perspective. That's how Dallas has won the last two series. They get a split game two. But Dallas, look, they were ready to go back to Oklahoma City for game seven, which, you know, anything can happen in game seven, especially on opponent's home court. They were down by 15 at halftime.
Yep.
And turned it around and came back, you know, one of the bigger comebacks in playoff history. And were able to turn it around. And then the really tense last, you know, two or three minutes there where Kyrie and PJ Washington and Luka finally stepped up. I mean, the one thing that Dallas was able to do is punish Oklahoma City on the boards.
Oh my God.
Especially offensive rebound.
If Chet Holmgren doesn't spend the offseason bulking up, there's going to be a problem next year with OKC unless they draft some beef.
Chet got 10 rebounds
bullied.
The last two games.
He got bullied by
Lively and Gafford and even PJ some. But, you know, they're not going to be able to do that with Minnesota. Minnesota's bigs, Gobert, Kat, and Naz Reid are going to be really tough. So I think Kyrie can't play this game of first half. I kind of sit out. I let Luka and everybody else do it. In the second half, I turn it on. I think Kyrie is going to have to really step it up. I mean, Luka looks like he feels better now. Hopefully his injuries are, you know, to the point where he can play closer to his potential. And because without Luka being Luka this series, they have very little chance.
I think the stories coming out of the West are Ant in games 4 and 6 seem to realize that he has got some Jordan-esque abilities where if he wants to, he can score at will. He made some moves in games 4 and 6 that were just incredible. No one could stay in front of him. That guy, the sky is the limit with that guy. And he just needs to learn to react to different defenses that are thrown at him. And the other thing to me is the Nuggets, just 1 year away from being world champs, are in trouble. They're old, they're slow. And when you have an old, slow starting five and two of your guys are off, Kadavius Caldwell Pope and Michael Porter. Michael Porter's not even playing in the fourth quarter of these games. He's so bad. You're in trouble. I think Porter's gone in the offseason.
I saw a stat today that, do you know the Nuggets have never beaten a 50-plus win team in the playoffs? So they've had some fortune.
Wow.
They've had some fortune of having a road to the finals and road to the conference finals of playing some teams that were not that great. And so I think you're right. I think the Nuggets have a tough offseason ahead of them.
Well, go ahead.
I also think OKC was the number one seed for a reason. And they were too young and choked. Yes. They just weren't hitting the shots they normally hit. In addition to beefing up Holmgren, they just need some experience, and they're going to be really good.
Yeah, well, they're loaded with draft picks.
Yep.
I mean, in the next two or three drafts, they have like 9 picks. It's ridiculous.
And speaking of draft picks, Pope, your Mavs have definitely showed that tanking works. That's how you got Lively.
They did get well, and they also got Lively because Oklahoma City was willing to deal with them, and they got Lively and PJ ultimately because Oklahoma City was willing to deal with them in trades.
I think Lively was the best value pick of that draft. In terms of where you picked.
I gotta ask you, 11?
He was 12.
Oh, right, you traded down.
Yeah,
yeah.
With Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
But before we move on from the NBA, because I mean, we've kind of shortchanged the whole story that was the Knicks this year, which was pretty unbelievable run. Let me go one by one and ask if you want them back. All right. Obviously, you want Brunson back, right?
Right.
DiVincenzo?
Of course.
Of course.
Hart?
Of course. They'll be our best bench players next year.
OG?
Yes.
Randall?
Yes.
Hartenstein?
Yep.
Robinson?
Yep.
Achiuwa?
He's a small piece to the puzzle.
Okay, but are you Tibbs. Also... And you want Tibbs. You've already said
it.
You want to run it back with everybody.
Listen, this team is built on character. So even if there was a superstar available, that person would have to fit into the mindset. Sure. Of these Nova guys, and I'm not sure who would. I mean, I'm intrigued by the thought of somebody with KD's abilities in the front court. But I still wouldn't give up on Randall, and I definitely don't want to split up the Nova trifecta.
So you don't think this was this? You don't think this was lightning in a bottle? You think this?
Could lose Hartenstein and get and if Robinson's healthy and we get another backup center, we'd be okay. I don't want to. I think, like I said earlier, none of these guys were starters except for Brunson.
Right.
Hartenstein wasn't a starter. DiVincenzo was coming in late in games, and Hart was maybe first or second off the bench. In the Pacers series, OG, Mitchell Robinson, and Brunson got hurt. And they were. You know, they were one win away from going to the finals. I don't know why you want to break that team up.
It's a big question to me whether, particularly in this playoff run where they were shooting lights out, whether this team is built to last or whether it was lightning in a bottle. I'm not sure.
Well, really injuries are definitely something you should consider, and OG has an injury history. Randall was a healthy guy. And Randall's only injuries that I know of were a broken leg and a dislocated shoulder. Those are not like nagging kind of things.
Right.
With Randall, they lost 25 points a game. Imagine if they had that kind of scoring in the front court in the Pacers series. I don't know. I like Randall. If they could get KD for Randall, of course they'd take it. But if you're the Suns, are you gonna take Randall for KD? I wouldn't.
Would you be willing to take one of those pieces that you want to keep for LeBron?
No. Not on that team. LeBron would ruin that team.
Interesting.
I like LeBron, but not on that team.
Good luck, Pope.
All right.
Last man standing.
Should be
interesting. Are you predicting?
I got the Mavs in six.
You got the Mavs in six over the T-Wolves. Okay. Yep.
And I got Boston 4-1.
4-1. Okay.
I like Boston. So
you said that, Rooster.
I said
the T-Wolves are home, right?
Yeah. I did say that. I did say in five.
I like the Celtics in five and the Mavs in six.
I like the Celtics in five and the T-Wolves in seven.
Either way, the T-Wolves-Mavs going to be a good series.
It's going to be a hell of a series.
The T-Wolves were the best defensive team in the league, and the Mavs were the best defensive team in the last 20 games after they got their new lineup. So it's going to be good time, must-see TV.
One of these games in the Western Conference Finals is going to have a Luka legend game. You can mark it down. I think Luka is already a superstar, but there's going to be a game that we're going to see in the Western Conference Finals that's going to stamp him as a legend.
Will there be a game where he gets thrown out early for his pouting?
That's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
He's already lowered the bar so much on that.
House, take us to the international world of soccer.
Well, before we do that, can we just talk about the NHL real quick and why if the Stars lose the Stanley Cup, they suck?
Well, I mean, we don't know who we're going to play yet. Vancouver and Edmonton play tonight, Game 7. Home ice doesn't mean shit.
Is that going to happen in this calendar year?
Until Edmonton won 5-1 last night, the series was Vancouver winning by a single goal with two overtime games already. I've watched some of that series. It has been mind-blowing. Like, it is so close. This should be a great, great game tonight. It's a good Game 7. Stars are going to be getting a tired team.
Which helps. Because the two series against the Avs and the Golden Knights, you know, took a lot out of them. And, you know, Panthers-Rangers is going to be another good series.
I'm kind of excited about that one, actually. I think that's going to be really good.
You like the Panthers, Milt?
I do love the Panthers are really good, really young, kicked our ass. That's going to be a hell of a battle.
Rangers are a team of destiny this year.
Yeah, it's just
but it's really hard. It's hard to go up to New York and win, man. I can see that's going to be a very lively environment.
Rangers Stars for me to vomit the whole finals long.
It would be good for the NHL if Connor McDavid made the Stanley Cup.
Well, that's true.
Kind of, Pope, there's a lot of pressure on you to prevent a Canadian team from playing for the Stanley Cup.
Right. We want to make Moose irrelevant. So
let's make that happen. That would really annoy me.
Especially since didn't Moose predict the Oilers were going to win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
I feel like he had five predictions.
Yeah, but he said the star is out in round one, too, so fuck the news.
All right, House, you're up.
So, real quick, this was I know we have some soccer fans among us. This was a really fun end of the season, and if it weren't for some really unique storylines, we might pass over this really quick, but there are some storylines worth recapping really fast. what Man City has accomplished, you know, there's all these tweets about what would be the equivalent. It's funny because Pep Guardiola basically said, he said, hey, look, I mean, the Bulls did six. Why aren't we in the same conversation for what the Bulls did? Or you could compare it to the Patriots or whatever other dynasty. But they've won four straight and six out of the last seven. The EPL player of the year, Phil Foden, is super, super young. They have Erling Haaland, who was last year's dominant player. They are loaded.
Haaland won the Golden Boot for the second straight year.
Yeah, I mean,
and yet didn't have a goal or an assist in the game Sunday.
That they are so loaded, and if you want to get in to the EPL, if you want to get into any of these international leagues, the EPL is really in a pretty golden age right now. Yes, there are people who claim that there were some games that Man City played with the whole financial permissions for what they could use their money with to get to where they were.
Blah, blah, blah.
Those are mostly the moaners, but that story is a great story. The other incredible story is I don't remember across sports seeing this alliance between fans and coach. I can't even remember one like what Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp just had. And if you just want to just pull up a few YouTubes, either the before game or after the game, the before game when Anfield was singing, you know, a cappella in unison, the entire stadium full-throated, "You'll Never Walk Alone" to Klopp. That's a pretty emotional moment. That was just their serenade to their coach who got them eight trophies, including a Premier League title and a Champions League title. That was a great, great end of season story. It's a little sad to see that Luton, who we gave a lasso to before the season began, who was basically playing, you had to walk through almost a neighborhood house to get to the away section. Luton's relegated to go back down. But the other huge story in world soccer is, I don't know if you guys know this, but in this century, there have only been three teams that for an entire season in any European league, there's only been three teams that have gone completely undefeated. And this year, Bayer Leverkusen, we always hear about Bayern Munich, but Bayer Leverkusen went undefeated, 28 wins, only six draws and no losses. And what's even crazier is, besides winning the Bundesliga, they still have two games left to go for their version of the treble. They can win their version of their League Cup, and they're only playing a second division team from Germany, Kaiserslautern, on the 25th, and the European League, because they didn't qualify for Champions last year, the European League final is on Wednesday between Leverkusen and Atalanta. So if Leverkusen wins these two, not only have they gone undefeated, but they've gone undefeated in for a treble victory, which would cement them as actually one of the greatest football teams of all time. The last really interesting part about soccer is that thanks to Messi wasn't the first one, because of course there was Beckham and there was Rooney, but particularly with what Messi did, opening up the doors to players coming over from European leagues into Miami, you now have the following. Olivier Giroud is now on LAFC in the MLS. Marcus Reus, the star of Dortmund, is rumored to be coming to Charlotte next year. Antoine Griezmann is rumored to be going to one of the two LA teams. Sergio Ramos is rumored to be going to San Diego. And even Kevin De Bruyne is rumored.
No.
Yes. What? Apparently, San Diego is making a huge charge for De Bruyne. Like you can't miss out on this kind of money. That would be definitely a game changer. He suffered a lot of injuries the last couple of years.
Maybe that explains his new Mary Lou Retton hairdo.
Whatever the case, I'll take it that if all the MLS can do is get the twilight of these superstars' career, I will take it. It makes it a relevant league. It makes players that are homegrown want to stay here to play with those kind of players. And I think that's a big part of this year's soccer story, is that when players are kind of getting towards the very end, their final stop now may be the U.S. Great, great news for U.S. soccer.
Well, let me just say this too, like for older fans who think, who haven't watched in a while and think, oh, it hasn't been really exciting since the days of Pele. Go back and watch the Man City West Ham game from Sunday, where Man City won 3-1, and watch West Ham's goal by Mohamed Kudus. The bicycle kick that he put in was incredible. Just really entertaining stuff.
Yeah, it's
Chelsea's half field.
From Caicedo. It's going to be a really, really fun year because, next year, because Man City remains the dominant force. Liverpool's not going away. Chelsea is now really strong. Aston Villa has now moved up into the top four and is playing champions next year. And Man U will rebuild. Tottenham's not going away. Even Arsenal had an unbelievable year, just miss. So, you know, it's no longer just a big four. You're going to have a big six or big seven next year. Prem is going to be must watch next year.
Who is kicked out and who's coming up? That's my favorite part of this.
Relegation time.
Yeah. So let me tell you that.
Where's Wrexham?
There's actually still one playoff game still to be played for one more team coming in. But going down is Luton Town, Burnley, and Sheffield United. And going up is Leicester City, Ipswich Town, which is Ed Sheeran's team. If you've been watching that, Ed Sheeran's been having a lot of fun with that. And there is still a remaining playoff game between Southampton and Leeds for a remaining spot as to who's going to come up. So it's going to be, these are teams that have traditionally been up.
Yeah. Leicester City.
Yeah.
They've won it.
They have won it in that magical year. But it's a bummer to see Luton go down. I agree with you, Milk. I hope that, especially in the MLS, I think there's going to be such a demand for MLS teams over time. We're already seeing like MLS junior teams. I think eventually the relegation game is coming to U.S. soccer. And I love it. I wish they did it for baseball. I wish they did it for basketball. I think relegation promotion is an awesome part of sports.
Yeah. You can have minor league teams come to the majors.
I'd love for the Yankees
that are part of their own franchises. I mean,
there are AAA teams that are better than the Chicago White Sox.
I agree with that.
Oh,
Bison is a big fan of Sheffield United. So real, I know he's not here, but I just wanted him to say
sorry Bison. Anyone. Yeah, sorry, Bison.
I know you know this. Who was the last EPL player to win the Golden Boot back to back?
Probably Harry Kane.
Yeah, it's got to be Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane. All right. Anybody have a punchable face? Don't call it a
comeback. We've done a lot of punching already, it feels like.
Let's keep it up.
Listen. I don't know that we really want to go deep into this because it's a lightning rod issue right now.
Oh, we do.
I just say this.
Our listeners expect us to.
I think it's weird that a college asks a kicker to be their commencement speaker. I know the Harrison Butker thing is really dividing people and it's getting a little crazy political about it. I think it was just weird. I think it was weird that that's who delivers the commencement address. I don't care that it's some like super Catholic school and he's a, you know, religious guy. I just think it's weird. I think that there's a sizable part of our listening audience that wants to punch him in the face and snip off his balls. If you didn't hear it yet, Butker's comments were that there's probably a lot of you in the audience that will be just as happy as being married and being a homemaker and having that as your job as going out and being a professional.
That's putting it mildly. He said that being a homemaker is a woman's highest calling. Yeah. And that's what you should all aspire to.
So, I mean.
And then he bashed the LGBT community pretty heavily, too.
You know that the cameras are going to be on. You know that you're a person of interest that people pay attention to. You know that you're the kicker in the 2-time Super Bowl champion team. Like, I don't know. I just thought that setting all the politics aside, it was just stupid, stupid stuff. Stupid for them to have him, stupid for him to make those remarks in that setting. You could have conveyed the same similar message, conservative messages in other ways. And I'm with all the people on our in our audience that want to knee him in the balls.
I'm totally with you. My point is this. Setting aside religion, and I grew up Catholic and I understand Catholicism, setting aside the fact that he seems to have cut the passages from Jesus out of his Bible. He's a kicker, for crying out loud. If it weren't for the NFL, no one would give a damn what this guy had to say.
That's right.
And he knows going in that the NFL and his team, his employer, are going to have to deal with the ramifications of that kind of a speech that he gave, which was highly political and offensive to, you know, a large portion of the population. What the hell is he thinking? But for the NFL, that guy's a nobody. And he goes in and thumbs his nose at the NFL, which is making a serious push to just stay out of that lane. You're a fucking kicker. Just kick and shut the hell up. Nobody's interested in what you have to say.
Is that like shut up and dribble? Just shut up and kick?
Yeah, but that's my point. You're not Tom Brady. You're not LeBron James. Nobody cares what you have to say. You're a kicker.
I could just see that SpongeBob meme. No one cares. And you just disappear.
Nobody cares.
Anybody else have
a
punch?
Do you think our nemesis, the Sunday Morning Quarterback podcast with the three pastors, would agree with you, Rooster?
Well, I'm going to skip to my lasso in answering your question.
Oh, wow.
Like, wow. I say, I grew up in a very Catholic environment. I have one nun in the family with whom I'm very close. And I'm going to give my lasso to the Benedictine sisters from Benedictine College, who released a statement basically saying that they don't believe that Butker's comments represent the Catholic Benedictine liberal arts college that the founders envisioned. Instead of promoting unity in our church, nation, and world, his comments have fostered division. We sisters have dedicated our lives to God and God's people, including the many women whom we have taught during the past 160 years. And these women have made a tremendous difference in their world through their God-given gifts in not only being homemakers, but also in leadership, scholarship, and in the business world, in their careers. And it just seems to me that that took a lot of courage for the sisters of Benedictine to come out and say that, and in the face of all the political divisiveness over Butker's statement. I really do think that he disregarded not only what Jesus said in the Bible, but also what Pope Francis just said last night. I mean, he's not speaking for the entire Catholic Church, and he shouldn't pretend to be. In fact, if you really are Catholic, you accept the fact that only one person should be interpreting the Bible, and that's the Pope. This was totally political and, I think, out of bounds for a kicker.
While we're
not to mention the fact that isn't it always the guys with the backstory who are bashing the gays? The story has come out that he slept with a dude in college, a male cheerleader. It's always those guys who have the wide stance.
Now it's making sense.
Sunday morning quarterback.
Listen, while we're on the religion thing, I just want to say I'm still upset about Andy Gentile nudging me out for second place.
Right.
Schwarbaum, I don't know why FGM does that to us Jewish guys. But well, Andy Gentile.
It's because you selected Sam Burns, but he didn't make a cut.
Barbecue sauce.
I thought the way Scotty Scheffler handled the entire episode was world class.
Yep.
And he had lots of reasons to complain. He had lots of reasons to mope. When he was pulled over, he was totally justified. If he wanted you to say, I'm Scottie Scheffler, I don't think you want to do this. He never name dropped. He never made a serious stink when he went to the jail. When he came out, he literally complimented the people in the Louisville Metro Police Department. And he really made it like, let's just get past this and return to golf. I thought the way he handled the entire episode is at least worth a golf clap.
I have to agree with you. I really hated him and Pope's obsession of Scheffler for so long. But after I saw an interview of him after he won the Masters, where basically he was like, you know, golf doesn't define my life. I don't know if you guys saw that. And yeah. Basically, yeah. He's like, you know, all these family, these parents that, you know, I have kids that play a lot of sports, and you see this a lot. He wasn't pressured. He was just like, yeah, I play golf. That's kind of like my job, but doesn't define who I am. He's a good dude. And yeah. It showed this weekend, too. So I have a lot of respect for him. Don't
call it a comeback. I'm going to jump back now and do one more punch, and I'm going to punch whoever the hell in the Giants organization is who came up with this throwback uniform.
Oh my God.
I mean, you would think they would learn the lesson from the Steelers Bumblebee outfit.
That's the worst uniform. Where people I've are
like,
seen.
never again. I'm never playing in this again. It's like it's a cross between Granimals and the Canadians jersey. It's disgraceful. It's going to demoralize the team. In the games, they have to wear that nonsense.
It's my new screensaver for you when you call me.
Oh, God. Oh, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Awesome. All right, let's move on to buzzer beaters.
Rooster, you have one. You have one.
I have one. I'm really impressed by some of the young arms in Major League Baseball so far this year. There are two on the Tigers. You know, the Tigers are winning games at a clip that none of us would have predicted, and it's because their 1-2 pitchers are Tarik Skubal and Reese Olson, who's a rookie. Skubal is 6'3", 240, and is now 6-0 with a 1.8 ERA. He's got the American League best whip of 0.78. And leads the league in strikeouts with 66. He throws an average 97 mile an hour fastball, followed up with an 86 mile an hour changeup. And according to Aaron Judge, he is one of the best pitchers in the entire league. And of course, most people have never heard of him because he plays for the Tigers. He's got incredible velocity. He's got incredible, you know, array of pitches and feel for his pitches. And according to Aaron Judge, the guy can throw any one of those killer pitches at any time. That's number one. Number two is, how about Paul Skenes coming out of LSU just right off of the championship last year? We have been talking about how hard it is for college baseball players to crack into the major leagues early. You know, and we were talking about the Vanderbilt duo of Leiter and what's his name?
God, Leiter is just—he has spit the bit. I mean,
yeah. Well, his teammate
got to go back to AAA, and
yeah, his teammate hasn't made it either. Paul Skenes shows up in his first—he's 6'6", 235—and his first outing, he against the Cubs strikes out 11 batters over 6 no-hit innings. He had 7 straight strikeouts in the first 9 batters. So he struck out 7 of 9 batters in the first 9. He had 12 instances of reaching 100 or more miles an hour in that game. And there was only one hard hit ball in the whole game. In the next game, he pitched well. He's now 1-0 with a 2.7 ERA in 2 games. He's clearly going to be a story all year long. There are others. There's, like I said, Reese Olson on the Tigers, Jose Soriano on the Angels, Hunter Brown on the Astros, Bryce Miller on the Mariners. But I want to talk about just one that came up by just happenstance, just luck. Luis Gil on the Yankees is the only reason the guy's not in, like, single A right now is because of Garrett Cole's injury. They brought him up on a whim, and the guy this past week had a rookie record 14 strikeouts against the minor league White Sox. His ERA is 2.39. His WAR is 1.5, which is number one rookie pitcher in the league. I think we're blessed to have some really strong pitchers replacing the old guard this year. And it's going to be interesting to follow these guys.
Well, let's see if the old guard can make a comeback in the second half of the season, seeing how the Rangers have DeGrom, Scherzer, Eovaldi all recovering.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's tough to have a long career as a pitcher these days.
Well, Skeens is throwing over 100 miles an hour consistently.
That can't last.
His arm problem is going to have coming sooner than later.
Yeah. But what are you going to do?
My buzzer is on the heels of pro baseball. We're just about to start the season of college baseball postseason with the conference tournaments this weekend, followed by the, you know, the regionals, super regionals, and the College World Series. I think it's really, really fun baseball. I think a lot of people got into it last year when we saw that LSU had a special team. This year, once again, it's basically an SEC tournament in many regards. I mean, the ACC has some hot teams too, but Tennessee, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Arkansas, you know, Georgia, all in the top 10. And Tennessee right now at 46-10 is probably the team to beat. But tune in for some college baseball, especially starting this week and the next few weeks. The college baseball postseason is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Rooster, did you want to mention something real quick about the WNBA?
Let's save that for the next show. I mean, basically, it's been a – I think they're a bit of a victim of their success this year, but let's save that. It's a longer story than we can handle right now.
Come back next week.
Come back next week. If you guys – if any of our listeners want to chime in on anything we've said on this show – hit us up at SMQB's mailbox at gmail.com. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
We need to thank our sponsor, too, Assembly, for continuing to sponsor the SMQBs.
As always, thanks, Assembly.
Assembly's the bomb. We use them at our law firm and are very, very happy with their services. Thank you.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.